Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals. And from time to time, it affords us some print space for some of our posts to get to help get the word out. So thank you for that. I gratefully like to acknowledge my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the country. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph, for that nice introduction. And I too believe that families are the basic unit of society, and God invented families, and God invented marriage, and so I now believe that God has a plan for each of us, and so here we are in recovery. Because people, beginning back in 1935, realized that helping another alcoholic is a great way to achieve sobriety and stay alive. And so people have been helping one another. And out of that was born the movement of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 Steps, the 12 Traditions, and Dr. Bob and Bill W. helped each other, and here we are. So I am certainly grateful that people were in the rooms and teaching the steps when I arrived, and so now this is my way of giving back to be here to help with the website, which is called rumradio.org, and help with the help teaching the fact that intensive work with another alcoholic is successful. And so I want to thank Joseph for putting together his website. It's dedicated to how to sponsor, how to find a sponsor, how to find a sponsee, what to do to help each other in early recovery. Very important information that he has just taken from the program, and taken from the big book, and taken from the 12 and 12, and put together on his site, and in a very useful combination, a nice syntax here. And so he offers this as a public service. He doesn't make a penny from the radio broadcast or the website. In fact, he's sunk thousands of dollars into it, and it's had a renovation and a facelift, which he funded through his own pocket. So I appreciate you doing that, Joseph, and this is not a business. This doesn't make an income. We're here just to give back because people gave to us, and in like manner, we want to give to others. And tonight's focus is step 5. And so if you'd like to look at the material, we're going to be reading it and quoting from the materials tonight. You can read along on the website, rubinradio.org, step 5, and in the 12 and 12, or the 12, what's it called? And you can follow along. You can also dial the number and join the conversation. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. The phone number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. Several weeks ago, I went to a hospital, mental hospital. The person who ran the show up there as service work, he said he called it a nut hut meeting. I've never heard that before. a euphemism, you know, we got to make things light. Oscar Wilde said life was much too important to take seriously. So we try to make things humorous whenever possible. And in the meeting, I got to share. I read the How It Works, and I have a really good rendition of that. God's given it to me, and I shared in the meeting. And one thing I noticed when I shared, Harold, was that it felt like just any regular AA meeting, even though it was in a mental hospital, it felt the same to me. And I believe the reason why is because AA is not a hotbed of mental health. And I even got an applause from it. So that tells you that they related to me, that the people that were incarcerated in the mental hospital related to me at a higher level. I went to a psychiatrist one time, and he asked me, he says, do you see things that other people don't see? Do you hear things that other people don't hear? I said, my answer was, doesn't everyone? And he turned around and said, you know, I can work with you.
Oh, that's great.
So our business on Rum Radio, and like in Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol, and Marley's Ghost? Yeah, Marley's Ghost. And he said, we were good businessmen. He's talking to Ebenezer Scrooge. And he said, and Scrooge goes, but we were really good businessmen. And he said, humanity was our business.
Interesting.
This is our business. Humanity is
well,
our
business.
Humanity is
let
our
me, let me just make a comment that I also do some of my work, not just with families, but with I run groups for people that have mental illness and addiction, and a lot of people have what is just a slight chemical imbalance in their brain, and their brains make up their own signals, which means that they do hear things and see things that are not really there. And I've worked with people for many years who have mental illness. It's that part is called schizophrenia, and it's a very simple thing. The brain has a chemical imbalance, but the effects of it are quite disturbing. One of my favorite patients is a man now in his 50s, and years ago when the movie came out, A Beautiful Mind, starring Russell Crowe, who won an award for his part in that movie, the movie portrays what it's like to have a brain that's malfunctioning like that. And so I like to remind people, everybody, whenever I have a chance, we don't really see with our eyes. We don't really hear with our ears. What's happening is the sounds go in, create electrical impulses. Those go to the brain. The brain is where we hear. The light goes into our eyes, creates impulses that travel to the brain. The brain is where we see. And if the brain's making up its own impulses, there's no way for the person to figure out which are real and which are not. They are identical. And that's where the disturbing quality comes in. As in the movie, he thought he had a roommate, and years later realized that it wasn't a real person. The way he figured it out is that the little girl, the stepdaughter, who was 7 when they met, a decade later was still 7. And rationally thinking about it, he realized that must be a hallucination and not a real little girl at all. And that was the beginning of him getting much, much better. He had 3 things going for him: a spouse that didn't give up, and a spouse who helped him find medications, a combination of medications that worked for him. And then he had the courage to, and the humility to do reality checks. He would ask people, "Do you also see this person?" Someone came up to him at the end of the movie and introduced himself, and he turned to others standing nearby at the university and said, "Do you also see this person?" They said, "Yes." So he said, "Oh, nice to meet you." So he did reality checks. And so we've been studying the fact that there are sometimes we have thoughts that are not true. Like centuries ago, they thought the world was flat, and they believed what they thought. And based on their belief, they had a number of different fears that were real fears. The fears changed their lives, but they were based on false information. And so the same thing occurs in the world of mental health. Some of our fears may be based on false information, and if we can find out which ones are error thoughts, that gives us a leg up in the world of recovery. So that's how we relate. And this tonight's chapter about step 5 and about using the world as our mirror is very important in eliminating error thoughts. Do you want to begin the material?
Sure. In the program of AA, we have a preamble, and part of it is that some have severe mental and emotional disorders, but they too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. And many people medicate with alcohol and drugs outside of the physician's purview. This happens more often, I think, than most people realize. Self-medication. I love that movie too. My favorite part of the movie was that he gets the Nobel Peace Prize because he figured out when a basic man's needs and an ability to accomplish that need. You know what that was?
Remind me.
Nobody go after the blonde. Because he figured out that was his – that actually he won the Nobel Peace Prize for that idea. That was the base idea. He was in a bar. A blonde walked in with a few of her brunette girlfriends. So he postulated that if they all went after the beautiful blonde and she would reject them because – in turn. And because nobody would go after the brunette. So they would – no one would get any. And then he realized that if they in turn – went after the brunettes and left the blonde alone, they probably had a better chance of getting the brunettes. And Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations wrote, it's the Capitalist Manifesto, that the highest and best good for the individual produced the highest and best good for the group. And he came up with what was highest and best for the group produce the highest and best good for the individual. And that was the Nobel Peace Prize. So remember, nobody go after the blonde.
There you go.
All right, let's get started. The simplicity of the 12 steps. Step five. Step five, shunning the lie for integrity is my guide. Now we're prepared to sit down with another human being and disclose the data we have compiled in step four. Another human being. How specific? Not a recorder, not your dog, not in prayer one-on-one with God, but with God and another human being. Compiled in step four, for when two or three are gathered, I will be there amongst them. So we ask another human being that fills the need, the spiritual need to have the second party, that invites God in, his promise. So God comes into the group, two of us in there, God joins us. It's been my experience that most addicts live their lives believing deep down that they are fundamentally broken. Broken people. This is what we might call a working hypothesis. We all know that any hypothesis is only as strong as the data which supports it. If a scientist were to come out with an idea that the hypothesis would cure cancer but was unable to present any data, he would be ignored. Therefore, if we have spent a lifetime selling ourselves on the hypothesis that we are fundamentally broken, we must be holding an array of empirical evidence which we believe supports this theory. The data on our fourth step is that platform which we have been purporting as a testimonial of our brokenness. Now we're told what to do with this platform. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained, in a rough way, what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when compiled, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. That's right out of the big book, folks. Essentially, we're going to take all this data which has been corroding and rotting inside of us and purge it. It's critical that the prospect understand this process of letting go of a chain or changing these things is not part of this step. There's nothing but a process of examination. Most people, upon first entering the rooms of recovery, tend to believe that they are like 600 things wrong. They have 600 things wrong with them. They will soon find, as a product of this step, that there is like six. This is a process of consolidation. As an example, if a person had $50,000 in debt on eight different credit cards, and someone was able to consolidate all of that debt into a single card, the person would not have less debt, but the debt would most probably feel a whole lot simpler to tackle. We must make clear to our prospect that the only thing which are sure to submarine their efforts are dishonesty or withholding critical information. Harold?
Very important. So just a little review for anyone who might be a beginner. Step one is about realizing that we've been whipped, that we really, by ourselves, we cannot handle alcohol. Step two is about the fact that there is a power greater than us that can restore us to sanity. And step three is making a decision to turn our lives and our will over to that higher power, over to the care of God. Then step four, we get a pen and paper and make a written inventory of all our defects of character. And step five then is where we sit down with someone who understands, someone we can trust, and we share the exact nature of our wrongs. It doesn't say we share every stinking little detail. it says that we share the exact nature of our wrongs. So we end up with a list of a half a dozen qualities that are our defects of character. And so this tonight's topic is this step five. And there are processes where some people take months and months, even years, to do their fourth step. But Joseph and I recommend that we do an abbreviated step four so that we can move through the rest of the steps and in a timely way. I think timeliness is more important. We will do another step four later in recovery anyway. And then step five is not a big 8-hour discussion. We don't have to take a day off work or take any vacation time. If we do things properly the way they did them back in the beginning, in the late 30s, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if we get back to our roots and back to basics, it works very well. And I believe that we need to do just that, get back to basics and do it the way people did it in the beginning. There's no reason to stray from that. So here we are. We've written our step four, and we're now talking, admitting to ourselves, to God, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Now, Joseph has included on the website some writing from folks in recovery and some quotes from the Big Book. And so you can recognize those by the fact that they're presented in italics with quote marks. And let's move through some more quotes from the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Said in the beginning, I believe God said in the beginning, fill the measure of your creation and find joy therein. This is where we're headed. This is what all this is about, finding joy therein. He also said it's not good for man to be alone. What he didn't say is sometimes it's not that bad either. If we skip this final step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. The only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. The only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility. Fearlessness, which means less fear, and honesty, in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else their life story. Bottom line, you could fill up 75...
All of life story. We can't leave out the word all until they told someone else all their life story. Do you see it there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Bottom line, you could fill up 75 pieces of paper with entirely truthful information on them, leave out a single shameful item, and completely undermine not just the utility of this step, but the entire recovery process. And this is certainly not because anyone in the rooms of recovery are desperate to know all your deep, dark, dirty secrets. Because trust us, you are not that interesting. Most of us enter the recovery world with a tragic case of terminal uniqueness. We believe that we have this fascinating batch of wreckage that no one else has ever seen before. The ego behind the thought is most remarkable. Think about how long human beings have been on this planet. What are the chances that any of us have ever thought, felt, or done something even remotely original? And yet, that fear persists. And so we must employ faith, We must trust that our partner will create room for all our shortcomings, realizing that the potential downside of being shamed, judged, or betrayed is far outweighed by downside of continuing to hold on to the secrets. Harold?
That really is wonderful. It's important. I've heard many fifth steps, and to the point where I describe myself as unshockable. I've heard everything you could imagine at least twice, and nothing really shocks me. It's really not about that. It's about trusting someone, giving a person a chance to put all this into words. They put it on paper, then put it into words, and it shrinks. So that's the amazing thing about it, and this step is very important. It's important that we be thorough and that we be honest, and that's all that really matters. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. My sponsor, one of my sponsors when I did a fourth step, had tried to belay my fears with the story that he had once committed fellatio to another man. And he said, this was common, and don't worry about it. Oh, okay. That was more information than I needed to know.
TMI. Too much information.
When we decide who's to hear our story, we waste no time. We have written inventory and we're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner that we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. This is first paragraph, page 75 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, those days using your AA sponsor has certainly become the norm. Regardless, doing a fifth step with a psychologist, a clergyman, should be psychiatrist. The reason for the psychiatrist, he's got psychologist on there, but it has to be a doctor. A clergyman, a friend, or even an AA member other than your sponsor is perfectly appropriate. What they're trying to say is the Big Book says that parts of the fifth step could be done with a professional. The idea is that some people have the ability for confidence. What they say is not privilege. It's about privilege. You could tell a doctor, a lawyer, or clergy, or your wife, if you have a death wish. These confidences are held legally privileged.
Yes, that's very true, and it's important to understand that there are people, your doctor, your attorney, who are sworn to secrecy, and they must keep everything you're sharing private. Now, there are limits to that confidentiality. If you are a danger to yourself or others, if you're suicidal, or if you disclose that there's been child abuse, then they are required to report that. Other mandatory reporters include school teachers and school staff, and hospital workers and nurses and doctors. They are mandatory reporters. So if someone's suicidal or if they report child abuse, that has to be reported to CPS by law these days. And so they are by law required to keep things confidential, and they also are required by law to report certain things to the authorities if it's shared with them. A friend, an AA member, of course, wouldn't have a legal obligation to, but I believe it would be a moral obligation. We have to protect the innocent in our society, and so in my work with as a family therapist, I'm a mandatory reporter, and if someone shares with me that a child has been abused, I'm required to call in a report. Actually, the reports can be submitted in writing now on the internet to Children's Services. CPS has a website, and it's very thorough. It's very interesting, and you can give the information anonymously if you want to. I believe in reporting things because if someone is harming children, the average child molester has 50 victims, ladies and gentlemen, 50 victims. So it's important to call the authorities, report what's happened, even if it's past the 7-year statute of limitations. Call it in because the authorities now can compile the information, and if there is enough information, it really helps to force the person to get help, and that's the whole idea. Incarceration is a way of taking the people off the street so they don't harm more children and forcing them to get some help so that they can quit harming children. And so I'm just making a little speech for reporting. It really makes a big difference. I work with families who are trying to heal from different forms of abuse, and it really helps when people in the past have made reports, because then all the reports add together and we can get people some help. And that's the main thing. So let's move forward, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. What I usually recommend in case of there's a problem for reporting, if there's a chance of homicide, suicide, and especially sponsorcide. The big book basically tells us that the sponsor should be the one to hear your step, if possible. Only if there's deep revelations that could cause harm where privilege should be used. But other than that, it's pretty open to who you say it to. The only requirement is that they know what we're getting at. They don't try to dissuade us. And that's about it. So, but the reason why the sponsor is because your sponsor is working closely with your recovery, and it builds a intimate bond that few people will ever experience. It's really a privilege to hear a fifth step. Step 5 in the 12 and 12 tells us, and I say this a lot. A lot of people don't like this because it's not being utilized. Step 5 was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. Until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. So what 12 and 12 is telling us, until we, not only do we have to do a fifth step, we speak complete candor to someone, and they've done the same with us. They've heard a fifth step. Who hears a fifth step? Your sponsor. Until you've sponsored someone through the fifth step, you still don't belong. You're still a visitor in recovery, circling the field, waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline, and it's another crash and burn. With the entire list having been shared and processed, we get our fifth step promises in the next paragraph. This is interesting. A lot of the fifth step promises mirror the ninth step promises. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken a step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had a certain spiritual belief, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. The only promise in the above list, which duly serves as a warning, is the feeling the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Yes, this may well be the moment where, if you've been thinking about drinking all day, every day, that you begin to feel a loosening of the grip of the disease. This is a blessed thing, but it is not evidentiary of the obsession being removed. There is work to do, and the idea that we have recovered at this point can be deadly. Finally, in the third paragraph on the page, we are given our instruction for what to do on the back end of the proper fifth step. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask, have we admitted anything? Harold?
Yes, that review is wonderful. Have we omitted anything? There's a lot of thinking involved, and I really like the idea that we go home, we take this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, and then reading the first five very carefully, we ask, have we omitted anything? And I suggest having some paper and a pen, and if we think of something we have omitted, make a note, write it down. Rigorous honesty is the rule of thumb here. Rigorous honesty. Go ahead, Joseph.
Thanks, Harold. That hour is really important. 60 minutes. That's what it's required in the big book. I've had sponsees call me back and say things like, I feel like an empty shell. I feel like a great weight has been lifted on my back. I feel light and free. Can you call me back at another time? I'm ready to have dinner. And so we take our 60 minutes of quiet time. Be quiet and know that I am God. Seeing to it, we accomplish the three things dictated in the above passage. We give some thought to the work we've done and what's come as a result of it. We spend time in spiritual practices. We open the book, read through the steps we have finished, and ask, is there anything that has been left out? If we come up with anything, we immediately turn it over to our partner. If we come up with nothing, then we rest easy in the knowledge that we're prepared to move to step six. My experience, step six, is interesting in the sense that most of the sponsees I've lost in the past have been on step six. If you look at step six in the big book, which is our basic text, you could cover step six and seven with the palm of your hand. There's very little to it, but it says it separates the men from the boys, and of course the girls from the women, the sheep from the goats, and the foxes from the hounds. So there's something to that step six, and what I think part of that is that on step five, it's the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So that means a lot of the pain that we came in, that drove us into the rooms of recovery, drove us into the last house on the block, otherwise we would never would have went. That pain is all but gone on step five. We rest now. We take a deep breath. You know, why don't we wait a while before we do step six? I want to marinate in my new life. And of course, what happens is that if you don't stay into action, especially new, chances are you're going to have Steppes laurelitis. You're going to slow down on the steps. And if you slow down at this point, the chances are better than average that you're going to go out again. When two or more are gathered in my name, the name of God, we will be there. The term human being leaves no wiggle room. Not my dog, not a recording, not in my diary, not just me and God. I have a picture on the website under the step-by-step. It's an alien shaking hands with George Bush. And the alien says, "Can't do it, Junior. It has to be another human being." We have written down our character defects in step four. It's truly humbling to see them in the light of day. It's more humbling to admit them to another person. It makes them more real and more painful to us. While at the same time, it takes away some of its power and a lot of its energy. We remain into action in step five. We experience a pinprick that punctures our overinflated egos. The 12 and 12 tells us that rarely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. The 12 steps help to deflate the ego. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than step five. The 12 and 12 reads that the word humility, used in this sense, means a clear recognition of what and who we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we can be. I'm honest around the cash register. Church, cha-ching, how honest do I have to be? In order to stay sober, you have to be rigorously, scrupulously, accurate, and precisely honest in all your affairs. It is crucial to be entirely honest. The ANA 12 and 12 says, few muddled attitudes have caused us more trouble than holding back on step five. Some people are unable to stay sober at all. Others will relapse periodically until then. Really, really clean house. Even AA old timers, sober for years, often pay dearly for skimping on this step. With needlepoint and pinpricks, we search out the patterns of lives and the quilt work of our behavior. We search out the patterns of thinking and behaviors that served us poorly. This is a strenuous effort to see clearly, with the help of another person, what it is about ourselves that we need to change in order to be productive, happy, and whole. We make a searching and fearless examination of ourselves in the loving presence of another human being and God. We are admitted to ourselves all the wrongs we have done. We have often lied to ourselves as much as we've lied to others. We would even lie when the truth would have served us better. Harold?
Well, yes. And having done a thorough step five, we're ready for step six, and so many people do get stalled. They go in the ditch with step six, and the step six is called the forgotten step. And for many years, I was puzzled. My first sponsor went to Florida and was chartering sailboat rides down there, and so I lost touch with him. And before we got to step six. And it was quite a puzzle to me why we would have to become entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character. I thought, what is that all about? Why wouldn't people just automatically be ready to have them removed? And then one day it dawned on me, well, if I'm, for example, self-pity, if I'm using self-pity on a daily basis, I'm not entirely ready to have it removed. I won't give it up if I'm still using it. And that's what it all comes down to. Are we using these defects, or have we had enough? Are we ready to let go of them? And then we're entirely ready to have God remove them, and not before. So step six can cause people to stall and the process to grind to a halt. And I understand that now. So moving right from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 can be extremely valuable. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. Yeah, I believe that's the key, to go right into 6 from 5 as soon as possible. Don't let the sponsee marinate in step 5. Getting to step 6 is critical as soon as possible. You got to remember that entirely ready sometimes can be a sticking point on 6. You got to remember that the steps other than step 1 are all ideals. You can only be as ready as you can be at any given time. So we do step 6 is one of the steps we do all the time. We do step 1, has to be perfect. We do step 3 all the time on a constant cycle of I give it to God, I take it back. I give it to God, I take it back in an endless cycle. Step 6, entirely ready. So I'm more ready at some other times than I am at other times. So 6 and 7 are done on a daily and a regular basis. And then 10, 11, and 12 are the growth steps. So out of the 12, there's 7 steps that have to be done on a daily or regular basis. So remember, there are ideals. There's no perfection in this. Only step 1 is the perfect, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't strive for the perfect ideal. But the chances are we're not going to get there. We are not saints. We're not going to get to the we're not going to be perfect in this. Rarely have we seen a person fail who have thoroughly followed our path. Rarely have we seen a person succeed who insisted on following their own path. There's a particular reason, there's a rhyme. This works. If it works, if you work it, if you take the actions necessary and you do what's suggested, it works. There's a lady that came into the meeting, and she's a chronic relapser. And as soon as she walked in, and I looked at her, and she knows me, she likes me in the sense that, you know, she likes my recovery. And she could barely look at me. She looked like a deer in headlights. You know why?
Why?
She just drank. I didn't even have to ask her. I knew. She just can't get it. She just can't get it. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. But I believe if they're willing to be honest and take certain steps, that they too can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit. But you know, sometimes you see it happen. We put our best effort forward, but it's not about us. It's about God, their relationship with God. If they haven't been able to develop that relationship with God, chances are that it's not going to work well for them. Although we had a guy come in tonight, he's an atheist, so he's concerned about the higher power concept. And I belayed his fears that this is spiritual kindergarten. We don't care what you pick on is a higher power. I says, as an alcoholic, sometimes we pick up a higher power, just barely higher, just high enough for government work, just enough to get by. Things will change. People will grow spiritually because they'll find their lives improve as they grow spiritually. So there's a carrot. Hey, I'm growing spiritually. my understanding, and my life is getting better. You know? How much for two of these? I'm in. I've been places, seen things, and things that are not written in your books. Everybody's afraid that of their uniqueness of experience. Don't worry about it. We've all been there. I tell my sponsees I'm a really good and step five because I'm starting to put some years on under my belt, and I've heard quite a few fifth steps. And you know what, Harold? I don't remember half of them after they're said. It doesn't really register with me anymore. It becomes historical memories. They're not emotional memories to me. They're basically historical memories, and they're put in a way in a file that I probably will never re-access. I don't look at the person and think of the fifth step. I just don't. You know why?
Why?
I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. There's not enough room for all these other guys' problems. I just don't have the room. So once it's said, it's given to God. And that's who keeps these things, not me. And he forgets them anyway. I like to think of it this way. The stupid neither forgive nor forget. The naive forgives and forgets. The wise man forgives and never forgets. That's for you to remember. So no matter how far down the scale you've gone, you can be service to someone else. And I said that in the meeting, the further down the scale you've went, the greater the service you can be to someone else.
Yes.
The bigger the sinner, the greater the saint. So there's room for you in AA. 7 yards to the fifth goal line, we take an honest look at the shipwrecks, the train wrecks, and the car wrecks, literally. We look plainly and completely at our behavior in order to identify those character defects that got us into the mess we now call our lives. With the focus of a magnifying glass, we look at our past behaviors and those situations that we want to put far behind us. We can start afresh with a clean slate. Our life's lease has been renewed. We will be identifying the amends that we'll be willing to make in step 8 and will actually do in step 9. We humble ourselves before God, to ourselves, and to another human being by admitting the exact nature of our wrongs. Emotional memories we feel at the deepest level. That's the key to recovery, is emotional memory. We feel at the deepest levels to conjure up guilt and remorse now motivates us to address our character defects in the steps to come. We forgive all wrongs, both real and imagined, and in turn receive forgiveness. I think Mark Twain said that I've had some really heinous problems in my life, and some of them were actually real.
Yes.
No man is an island. We rid ourselves of that terrible sense of isolation and loneliness. We join the fellowship of the Spirit. We are relieved of guilt and have lost several dress sizes of shame. If we have been thorough, we have freed from the shackles of the past and walk free men and women on the road to happy destiny. How do you spell relief? We have planted and sowed in our harvest the sweet relief, the perfume of forgiveness, and a fresh healing. A 12-step expression, we are sick as our secrets. Sometimes we try to keep our deepest, darkest secrets. Hopefully they will just go away, that nobody needs to know. I can take it to my grave. Our secrets ultimately turn into Uncle Fester and Aunt Putrid. Only when they are revealed by the light of the day can they be healed. Step 5 is all about healing and starting over again. A song lyric from Ray Wiley Hubbard, it's not any easier to be born once as it is twice. We get a do-over on life. The big book says, once we have taken a step withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had a certain spiritual belief, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Harold?
That is beautifully put. This is a wonderful, wonderful and important step. I think our listeners can get a feel for how important this is and why, at this point in time, after completing this step, we're truly in the fellowship. No longer outside looking in, but we are in, we're included, and it's the beginning of the fellowship of God and man. And so that's what is required. I reminded everyone near the end of tonight's meeting that I chaired that really what's happening is that we're gathering in these rooms, we're learning things, and we're preparing ourselves to be able to help people that are newer in recovery. So as we learn the 12 steps and go through those with our sponsor, we're in essence learning how to help somebody newer in recovery through their 12 steps. And that's the key to this whole recovery and healing, is that we've got to learn how to help someone through their 12 steps. That's what will keep us sober when nothing else will. And so I got some nods and I got some agreement when I shared that. I think that's the forgotten principle these days. I'm not going to get off the point. I'm going to keep pounding away at the fact that we've got to work with other people if we really want solid recovery. So that's the bottom line. We've got to, it's a we program. The we program. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. How many fifth steps do I attempt? That depends on how many fourth steps completed. Give up? They're the same number. The fifth step is the second half of the fourth step. The importance of being earnest comes into play in your fifth step. The pain that brought and the accompanying freedom is offended long remembered. The world is but a stage, but get on your mark, set and get the right set and plan well. Careful planning can add to the effectiveness that gives rise to the feelings of freedom and the release that comes from a well-executed and spiritually directed fifth step. The fifth step experience is closely tied to the sincerity and the commitment you have as a sponsor to listen carefully and closely to your sponsee inventory. The vulnerability we all assume as sponsees is taking the fifth step with another human being is both awesome and inspiring. Confessions
yes.
of error is like a broom which sweeps away the dirt and leaves the surface brighter and cleaner. I feel stronger for confession. Mohandas Gandhi. Well, Harold, we're just about out of time. Do you have any last thoughts on step five?
Well, it's very important as if you're new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or any of the 12-step programs, listen for someone that you can respect, someone that you can trust, and begin doing the steps with another person there who has led others through the steps. Get to work on it right away and read literature every day that's recovery literature. Call somebody every day, go to a meeting every day, work the steps from the book with pen and paper, and pray. So happy recovery, everyone.
Thanks, Harold. Well, we were just about out of time, so I wanted to remind you, get to the website. We're in 134 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We're in, we have 2,125 towns, cities, and villages, and we're approaching 127,000 hits to the website. So I know this is a good work. So what I'll tell, the way I leave it, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.